Welcome to Geeks of the North, a hobby and gaming podcast with Abel Prevez. This week, Antoine Yeoman and I are here with Captain Spud, a Canadian sculptor of some renown. Well, at least according to him. So why don't you sit back, relax, grab a paintbrush, and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Geeks of the North. As always, I'm your host, Paul Filio, here with my co-host, Antoine Bergerot.
Hello.
That other guy, Yom Le Machin.
Hey.
And our special guest this week, Captain Spud.
Hello.
That was very strange, Spud. I approve.
Good. Everything would be really strange, I guess, with him.
Well, his name's Spud, after all.
Spud!
Let's not forget.
My parents didn't love me very much.
Well, I can understand why, having spoken to you a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people may not know this, but the captain, as I'll call him, is an expert sculptor of some renown.
Very minor renown.
Well, some people know who you are. That's better than us.
At least one of you does.
Well, exactly. Hey, when Meg came to town, she knew who Spud was. She was surprised I didn't know who Spud was. Because she's like, Spud is coming. I'm like, Spud is coming? Like, yeah, you know, Spud. I'm like the dog from the 80s? It's like, I had no idea what the hell she was talking about. She's like, no, you know, red suit with green, like red and green tights. Like, what?
She said she was disappointed that I didn't actually show up in red and green tights. And then she corrected herself. Maybe not actually that disappointed.
It was pretty freaking hilarious. I'm like, She went on, like, you know, I can't believe you know this guy. And she's describing you, right? But describing your Facebook
you know,
profile picture. And, like, yeah, it was funny. I was highly amused. So you are a traditional sculptor.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I don't think this is a career for you. I think this is just a passion and a pastime, right?
Yeah, I pretty much refuse to take money for it.
Well, then. I'm sure that'll make people very happy to hear.
The trick is to find a way to get him to work for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He accepts bribes.
Exactly. He doesn't accept money, but you need to trade something.
Generally speaking, I will sculpt anything for someone who I think will paint it really nicely. Because after years and years and years of ruining my own sculpture by painting it horribly, I just want to see it pretty.
You must have been pretty happy then with the cake toppers you made.
Yes. Yes. Well, actually, I haven't seen them yet.
Oh?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll bug Liz. I think we mentioned it before, just in case we didn't, Captain Spud actually sculpted the cake toppers for Elizabeth Beckley's wedding, for a wedding cake.
Mm-hmm.
And they were awesomely cute. It was basically her and her fiancé as chibis standing on top of a dragon's body, right?
Like the tail is coming out of the lair.
Kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I was fortunate there. She had, like, already, when she came to me, she already had a fantastic piece of concept art to work from, so that made it a lot easier. Whereas, like, 6 months before that, my sister came to me and, like, I'm getting married. You should do our wedding cake toppers. And I'm like, okay. So what do you want on them? Well, I don't know. We'll be us. I'm like, okay, so what do you want to be doing? Well, We play rugby. Well, we haven't played rugby in like 4 years. Oh yeah, we go to restaurants a lot. So basically, I had to make wedding cake toppers for two of the most boring people on the face of the planet. So after that experience, having someone to be like, "Hi, can you sculpt me and my fiance as a barbarian and some kind of paintbrush warrior on a dead dragon?" I'm like, "Yes, yes, I can."
That is awesome.
So
okay, well, I don't want to dive into our main topic too soon, because that's a pit we'll never crawl out of. So let's power through the boring stuff to get to more Captain Spud.
So it'll be worth it.
Well, no kidding. That's why I invited you on. I mean, I'm already excited. You can't see how excited I am right now.
That's
a good thing, because it would make you uncomfortable.
I don't think
we're going to go right into hobby time. And I'll start hobby, because my hobby is disastrously short. So all I did for the last 2 weeks is paint one piddly figure. And really, depending on how you look at it, it's only half a figure, because I painted the beast form of Cro-Mac, the Ravenous from Hordes. And anyone who knows the model, he actually has two forms. He's got like a human warrior form and then like his beast mode. And I've got most of the beast mode done, so I'll finish him up in the next night or two. And he's actually come out quite nice. I'm pretty surprised. Jim Wapple said I was acing him. So, just saying. Throwing out some names there, you know. Giving myself some cred. Yeah, he's like a father to me, even though we're about the same age.
Oh, balls. So,
I know. Anyway, so, on that note, yeah, that's a bit for my hobby. And games, I haven't had a chance to play anything. So, I mentioned I was in the Journeyman League last show. But the problem is, I can only get to the store at about the time that everyone else has left. So, this makes it really hard to play games in the Journeyman League on Thursday nights. Consequently, no games last week. And,
it's like you're cursed to play against me. Because I'm the only one left at this point.
Yeah, well, exactly. You are 80% G who works there, right? And I can play him after his shift at like 11:30 at night, if I'm insane. But then I have to also take him home too, which means I get home at like 1 a.m. or 2 a.m., depending on the day.
And this is weeknight, though. People remember that.
Yeah, it's a weeknight. So it's not horrible. Like, I'll survive. But with the baby... And this week would be okay, because the baby's been sleeping. But prior to this, for the last several months, the baby doesn't sleep past 2 a.m. So I'd get home just in time for the baby to wake up and keep me up the rest of the night. So yeah, it was pretty horrendous. Anyway. So yeah, that's it for me. No games and only a little tiny little bit of hobby. Antoine, save me from my shame.
There was not that much more. So,
damn it, Antoine, what do I pay you for?
I did 3 Lizardmen Heroes in a combined commission with Yom. He was painting a giant unit that we'll talk about, and I was painting the 3 heroes, two Saurus, one with the Battle Standard Bearer, and what's her name? The Skink Shaman. So they came out good. The client was happy. He liked the metallic on it, and he's planning other stuff with lots of metallic. So we might have a follow-up commission on that. Who knows?
Yeah, we share commissions now because we're like brothers to each other, right?
And because neither of you is good enough.
The problem is not the being good enough. There's already somebody for that. We're not fast enough.
Yeah, Spud, you might actually know this, or might not actually know this. And I don't know why you would know this, because we don't ever talk, really. But my commission painting service is actually called Good Enough Studios.
Oh! I feel that's very honest advertising.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And I don't do display quality stuff. I do high-level tabletop, and that's it, right? So it's good enough. If you want display, you go to Antoine, you go to Yom, you stay far away from me.
And they are good enough.
Yeah. That's right.
Wearing that thing.
Gotta own it.
Yeah. Yom and I have been talking about doing a joint studio for some time. We have a name, we have a work of a logo for months, but we just never did the work to finalize it. But yet we have started doing the combined work anyway. So it's about the same.
Yeah, just not with the name.
Just not with the name. That's it. So on top of that, I also, during the Geek Fest, we had a painting table there. And I've been painting Ox, my butcher's captain for Guild Ball. So it's maybe 30% done, something like that. So I hope to finish it before next show. And then power through the rest of the team to have a painted team soon. They're my next project. That's it for Abby. Not a lot. We've recorded, I think, a week and a half ago. So not that much time since then. On games, I had one Guild Ball game with Daniels, our friend Philippe Daniel. My butchers against his masons, but his paper doll masons. He's trying the game for a first full game for him. It was fun. I love the Guild Ball. It's my fourth real game, I think. And Yep, not sorry at all. I got those models for sure. And lastly, I just mentioned GeekFest. That was GeekFest Montreal this past Saturday. It's a geek general geek convention with video game stuff, cosplay, Artemis Bridge simulation, board game, everything. And we were running
furries.
Yep.
Sorry, had to throw that in there. Okay.
And we were running demos with the Geeks of Nerd group. In the end, it was Paul and I. Other people, we had some no-shows, but it was fun. The game that was the highlight was Super Dungeon Explorer. It had always been the case at Otakuten when we did demos, but that's their main target too. But even at the GeekFest, Super Dungeon Explorer was the most requested demos we had. After that, it was probably Gilball. There was more interest for it, and 40K and War Machine sadly came last.
Yeah, and I just have to clarify something here. Antoine's very kind to say that we gave demos. What he really means is I showed up 4 hours late, but at least I brought him lunch. And then, you know, he did demos and I watched. Because... Yeah, I don't know how to play Super Dungeon, and the only other demo I saw was the Guild Ball, which I also don't really know how to play.
So, but you were there to moral support. I was moral support,
and I actually talked to people about miniature hobby and you know general miniature stuff, painting and 40K and stuff.
And you helped Jerome about 40K too.
Yeah, exactly. I still did stuff. I just didn't do any demos.
Yeah. So that's it. That's it for me.
All right, me on the other side, the commission, the joint commission that Tony was talking about was for the Lizard Man Army.
Seraphon.
Lizard Man Army. The Seraphon is a city name. We won't use it.
Anyway, I don't think I read those in the new one.
Something else, as we learned today.
Okay, somebody.
By somebody?
Yeah, it's the name of the artist. It's not a genre.
Oh, kind of. But it's still strange. It's still
but
strange.
He's so prolific that it's associated with him.
He can load like full pages of Google with his stuff. Jeez. So it started. Okay, talk about it then.
No, go. It's your thing. I have
to talk about it. So.
What do you want me to talk about? The Seraphon thing?
Yeah.
You found it. Go for it.
Anyway, okay,
I like how no one wants to own this. Nope. It's like, no, not me, not you, you, no.
So, basically, I don't know who found it first, but
you saw it on Jam.
Genially, shared it on her Facebook wall because it was too funny not to do so. That this guy's name was, like Tonio said, it's associated to a genre. So, what he's drawing is like cartoony furry characters, you know, the furries, in bondage situation when somebody is having their foot tickled. Like it's foot tickling fetish weird thing.
As you do, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, so it's great that G-Dub, like, check if the name was taken before they copyrighted, but they didn't think of just doing a simple Google search of like, what is the name associated with? So there you go.
I mean, I'm looking it up. The one saving grace, it doesn't seem to generally be like hardcore furry tickling porn. So it's not like they're gonna get their 8-year-old customers in trouble or anything. I think they're covered.
It's tickle torture.
Yeah,
it's tickle torture.
They're clothed. It's all good.
It's weird, but it's not horrible.
No. Yeah. This is like 6 on 10 furry porn. This is manageable.
I didn't know you had a rating system, but
doesn't everyone? Well, I mean, you need one once you get into it. Otherwise, you know, how do you keep track of, you know, what does it for you?
How else do you know what level of hell you're going to?
We'll have you more fun on the show. There's another information we can catch for you. Important information.
You'll, You'll either get a lot more listeners or lose all the ones you already have. It's either or. There's not a lot of middle ground.
Depends on what we say about Age of Shinmar, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, so back on topic. So the guy plays Warhammer Fantasy 8th Edition. So they are lizardmen. I confirm that. So anyway, I did a unit of 28 Temple Guard. My part was a tabletop commission. Antonio did three more advanced level heroes. So in the end, it worked great to work together. So it's cool that the guy was happy and will send more stuff our way. I guess we have more joint commission in the future. So we finished a secret project that we're working with on. You want to join in, Daniel?
Yeah, I'm not sure what we're allowed to say because the podcast will release after that project will go live, but we don't know what part of it will be available in public. So I think we can say what project it is, not go into specific stuff.
Exactly.
So go for it. Okay. You got the contract first. So.
All right. So again, Jenny, because she's like a sister to me. Dave Drappy. Also, she contacted me a while ago because they are, well, by the time this podcast is on, they have a Kickstarter coming. It's the Arcadia Quest Inferno expansion. So, probably that they got the models late. Like with a short period of time before going live with Kickstarter, and we're running out of painters. I don't know. But she contacted me to help with the project. So, Spud, you have a part to play in that because we are friends with Liz Beckley, which is a freelance painter, but also their main studio painters for Arcadia Quest. She didn't have much time because she was getting married at this point. So she gave a good word on my part. Plus, Janelle, she saw my Chibillon at Ithaca last year. Well, not last year, this March, I mean. And she was impressed with it. So those two things combined made her contact me. And after that, I asked her if she wanted more help that I had friends that could participate. And that's when Tanya got in. So basically, we did like 16 miniatures. Of course, we're going to share them on our pages, whatever one's been unlocked. But yeah, we were under NDA. This was a secret project under NDA by Kumini or not to paint Chibi miniatures for Arcadia Quest expansion. That's pretty cool. It took a lot.
Well, you're welcome.
Yes, but it was a point to do that, Shibion. There was no point. It served the purpose. Alright, so after I was done with that, those two big projects, I just started painting the Ancient King promo miniature from the Wrath of King Kickstarter. It's a weird model. The art looks good, but the model itself, the cast was so I have to put some extra work to make it look good or okay. You'll be the judge. And I started assembling and cleaning from Parameter Press Caliban, the Gator Warlock, and the Devil Shadow Mutineers, the little unit of creature guys. And that's pretty much it for hobby.
Did you play games?
Oh, yeah, games. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, why did he stop talking?
Like, yeah, because I thought I was done. Like, my work is done. My work is done here. I play games. I joined the Journeyman League at our friendly local game store, the Gamers World. This week we're just like 25 points, but I'm I'm playing Arias, and the uncool kids are, you could say, the bench warmers. Like, all those models, first, Arias is not a really strong model, so I'm playing not really popular models with her, so it's the team of my journey. Like, the Nephilim soldier, the Carnivine, the swordsman, the incubies. And we had two games this week. I won against Jose's Alcohol Den Cataran Luchadors, because the theme is that everyone is wearing a mask. So he's not taking that too seriously either. So it's the Cador Army with mercs, and to get your ticket in, you need to be wearing a mask. That's how we build this list. You have a mask, you're in. What will you do with the list? I don't know. We figured that out. And after that, I play a new guy, like one of the young blood, I guess, from the Gamers World. New player. He was playing
Etienne, right?
Etienne was playing Menacht, so Resnick and the usual suspects that you will face when you face Menacht. So, nothing specific to report about this game. It was like any other Menacht game. Same thing coming at you. Usual answers. But it was good. It's cool playing Arias because you, especially in the Journeyman League that does not take itself seriously, you just do like funky stuff and either win or lose, it doesn't really matter. That's pretty much it for game because after the two big project, I needed a break, so I've been playing some video games that are not really worth mentioning, I guess.
How long were you working on? How long did it, out of curiosity, does it take to paint 15 chippy models?
Okay, it took 2 weeks.
Oh, that's a lot faster than I was expecting. I thought you were going to say like 3 months. No, that's how long it would take me to paint 15 models.
Like every night and weekend. So, yeah, I was in the house, but not really filling up for the daddy's role. it took a lot of time because we were rushed. We needed to finish them before the end of October, and we received them mid-October. So we had to rush in.
Yeah, and you did, was it 10 and 5, I think, was the split or something?
The original split was 10 and 5. But,
finished early, and I was late, so he took care of the extra one I had. So it ended up being 11-4.
And we're both happy and proud of what we did. I mean, they look great. Jen also think that they look great. So we're good to go. We're on the cool mini's good side right now.
Yay!
Yay! They didn't like say, "This is crap, guys. Start over. You won't get paid." No, everything's cool.
Well, the models do look cool.
I want to see what people would think of them, and the Kickstarter will be a success, probably because it's cool me. But hey, if they have another expansion coming next year, I want it.
Yeah, well, chibis are like the in thing now, right? If the new Super Dungeon Explorer Kickstarter is anything to go by.
Yep, totally. Hey, Splat, you did something recently?
I did. If we had recorded this 2 weeks ago, I would have had nothing to report. But yay, you guys picked a good time. So I actually finished a model recently. It was my birthday was about 6 weeks ago, and I took a 4-day weekend and I just sculpted a model, which I've never actually done all in one shot before, which was interesting. I'm usually just sculpting on like evenings and weekends.
I thought that was super impressive, by the way you just powered through that.
Mm-hmm.
It was very tiring. I was very tired of sculpting by Sunday. but yeah, so the other part is I never, ever, ever sculpt anything for myself. I always just make stuff for other people. And so I, like, when people ask me, "Hey, can you show me something you've sculpted?" I always have to be like, no, I don't have anything.
Cause I don't have it.
So I mean, I can show you pictures of what it used to look like when I had it. But no, so I wanted to actually make something for myself that I would like and would be able to keep. And so I kind of drew up this little, character of like a really, really, really beefy lady in, heavy armor with a big hammer and stuff, and I was like, yeah, it looks cool. And then, I took the entire weekend and sculpted it, and I got like 80 to 90% of the way through the model on the weekend, just a little bit of cleanup to do after that. And then, so that was basically all done in the same week, but then I took a break, and then I had sculpted her with her leg up in the air, like standing on something. And then she was not standing on anything, so it looked a little strange. So I needed to then put a base under her. And so I basically spent the last 2 weeks sculpting a base to go underneath and put her on like an evil, creepy, you know, cult temple type of thing.
Okay.
It looks cool. Yeah.
So.
So you sculpted the model in 4 days.
About that, yeah.
And then spent 2 weeks to make a base.
Yeah.
Okay, just pointing that out.
Yeah, no, it's I planned to do it in 2 nights.
It's funny how that works out sometimes.
Everything kept being really wobbly, and it was just like, it was probably like 3 nights of actual sculpting, and then the entire rest of the time just cleaning stuff up and be like, why won't you go straight? Why? It's very frustrating, but it's done now. Yay!
And it looks awesome.
So, it's going up sometime this week, so I should have a blog post to link when the show actually goes up. And then other than that, I've been, I had a lot of fun making that one. Actually, one of the best parts about that one is, ordinarily I've always sculpted models to be for games. So I've always sculpted in like 30 millimeter scale, because that's all the games that I play and that my friends play. But that one, since I was just sculpting it just to be a pretty thing to look at, I sculpted it at a larger scale, and I had a lot of fun sculpting at a larger scale. So I think it's a roughly 40 millimeters, although I wasn't very accurate, so it's actually a little taller than that. But anyway, so I have so much fun doing that I decided I wanted to do some other ones. And so I have been doing up concept art for my next couple that I want to do in the same scale. So like way too big to be useful for a minis game, but big enough that I then have some extra room to put details and make nicer looking faces and stuff. So the first one was a big tanky lady with a ram themed armor and weapon. And then the next one is going to be like a very elegant, lady in like plate mail, but with covered in rose details, but like metal roses all over the place. But then she actually has like a little planter of roses going around her neck, which I thought was kind of fun. And then for the last one, again, I was trying to go for like a different look for each of them. So like the first one was like very, you know, grunty and tanky. The second was very elegant. The third one is like sort of like a scary evil knight. So that's a lady in what I'm still working on that one. It's like dragon themed armor, but like vaguely. So it's like, it's plate armor, but the lots of smaller plates. So that they almost kind of overlap each other, like scales, and then periodically there's like spikes sticking out and stuff. So yeah, in the end, but I want to have the three that are all like basically the same idea, lady in heavy armor, but, all with a totally different look to them and stuff like that. So that's what I'm going to be working on in the next couple of months, I think.
It's going to be fun. What would happen to them?
I will finish them and then they'll sit on a shelf.
Yay. Okay.
I don't know, you can paint them if you want, but other than that, they're just going to sit on a shelf.
Okay. So.
This thing, I got so tired of ruining my models. Every time I put paint on my stuff, it's wrecked. So,
well, Spud, if you only want them good enough,
you know, okay. I'll keep you in mind.
Yeah. We'll talk.
Okay. and then games. So pretty much the only game that I play is Infinity, because it's super awesome, and why would you need any other game than Infinity?
Can you repeat that, please?
Whole sentence? Infinity. The best game of all time. The only one you need.
Well, I think that pretty much proves you're insane. So that's okay.
We have a little thing going on here between me and Paul that, he doesn't like the game because it sucks, and I like the game very much.
Because you don't suck,
exactly,
and are awesome.
Yeah, actually, I don't dislike the game. I dislike the rule book.
What?
I think the rule book is horribly written.
Oh my god!
The new edition is much better than previous edition. Granted.
Like, I couldn't disagree with you more. The whole thing about that is they went to, like, okay, everybody's like, oh, the translations are so much better. I don't even care about the translations. I can muddle through the old translations. They went to a bulleted rule book. I cannot stress enough how much of a better system it is to have a bullet form rule book for any game. Like, so many of the games that I have played, the rule books are terrible because they try to do everything in long paragraph format. And then they mention something in the middle of a paragraph. And so unless you're actually like reading it very carefully, you miss things or things get bumped to the next page and things like that. But this is all like boxes around things. So you know if that section isn't finished yet. Like how many people in first edition War Machine actually knew that cavalry got +2 attack when they were charging? Very few people, because it was one single isolated sentence at the top of the next page. And there was no indication on the previous page that there was no, that information would be
first came out. Yeah, that's true.
And things like that. So both which brings me back to the Infinity rulebook, they went to the bullet system. So clear. They eliminated just that alone. They eliminated like 90% of the toxic rules interactions. It was amazing. And so, you are a bad person who has wrong opinions and you should feel terrible.
I don't feel terrible. I will give you credit, though. Give them credit, I should say. Not you, because you had nothing to do with it.
as far as you know.
The rule book, well, the bullets are nice. I did like that when I started reading the rule book. It was just when I read the same rule for like the fourth time in like 40 pages, I was like, okay, I'm done. Like, I can't.
Yeah, they're making sure it's clear.
Anyway.
It's cool.
All good.
It's cool.
It's all good. It's all good. They have beautiful models.
Mm-hmm. And great rules. A lot of people like the game. Combined together, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I think
a lot of people like the game. That's fine. I think it's overly complex.
I will totally agree with you on that. It has a vertical learning curve.
It's risky. It's got too much going on. What I need is something between Infinity and Mercs. You know, more meat than Mercs, less meat than Infinity, and then I'd be happy. Which I guess is where 40K sits. And that's just strange to say. Yeah.
So, so other than that, that's it. Ordinarily I would have been able to say we played Pathfinder, but my group is terrible. So.
Your group is terrible, so you don't get Pathfinder.
Well, it's my fault for putting together a Pathfinder group entirely out of rapists, murderers, and child molesters. I mean, those types of people keep a very busy schedule, so it's hard for them to actually meet when they're expected to.
Plus, the prison and the court dates and everything, yeah.
And sure. The murdering, the raping, and the child molesting, yeah. Obviously. Mm. A lot of planning goes into that, so I'm told.
And on that note, I think it's time for a break. Wow. No.
A break of it. We just read the Kate's fun during that short interlude.
Are you actually done, Spud? I was just being silly.
No, I'm good. I'm good. That was it.
Okay. Well, then. On that note,
I'm trying to force an R rating on this. Come on.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break while I try to save the rest of the show. And we'll be back. We're back, geeks. And we're back. Okay, so this week, the hobby tip of the episode is brought to us by Captain Spud. So Spud, what you got for us?
So my number one hobby tip, especially if someone's going to get into sculpting, is you're going to want to shave off all of your hair. I'm serious. Because I have noticed that my sculpting ability has actually gone up at almost the exact same rate that my hair has been falling out. Ergo, hair impedes sculpting ability.
Okay, so you have to go bald to get there.
Well, are you sure it's not the aging and experience? That's
No. It's the hair. It's
mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it impedes sculpting ability. It actually crowds out the brain cells responsible for that.
Is it just for sculpting or is it for painting too?
Well, I haven't gotten any better at painting, so that's all. Like
3D sculpting, is it? You have to lose your hair too.
You know, I just haven't tried that in about 10 years, but I would be interested to see if it carried over. Like we definitely set up like a pretty rigorous experiment around this, I think.
I got nothing. Like,
so my actual hobby tip. This is my hobby tip. If I was going to put my hobby, this is a hobby tip for literally any hobby that anyone ever tries to do. Be unbelievably critical of your own work. And this applies if you want to get better at sculpting, or you want to get better at painting, or you want to get better at drawing, or you want to get better at, I don't know, horse riding, like whatever. Because I can't tell. It's very frustrating for me when I see people on the internet who are like, here's the thing I sculpted. Here's the thing I painted. Actually, I never see here's the thing I sculpted. Nobody sculpts. Here's the thing I painted. Let me know how to make it better. And that attitude, I can't stand. And my hobby tip is, tear your own work apart. Every time you do a piece of work, immediately go, okay, what worked? What didn't work? For the things that worked, why did they work? Why did they work better this time than the last time I did it? What did I do differently that made that happen? For the things that didn't work, well, why didn't it work? Was it always not working throughout the entire process? Or did it look good and then suddenly when I did something, it stopped looking good? And so on and so forth. And I think that not enough people do that type of introspection and analysis of their work. And that's why so many people remain terrible at whatever they're trying to do forever. And it's very frustrating to me that they don't realize the reasons of that stuff and never get any better. And that's why I hate all people. All people. That's my tip.
All right. That was a great tip. The end was a little strange. And you know what? You're absolutely right. I noticed years ago that when I started actually looking at my painting and being critical of myself, that my painting drastically improved. Mm-hmm. That's when I went from being really shitty to being good enough.
Yep. Yeah, and intentionally do stuff that you know won't work just to find out the ways in which it won't work. Like, it's amazing. Yep. So.
Well, even when you do something that doesn't work, you may still learn something from it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I think you still need to tolerate people, Spud, that ask for advice, because sometimes it's hard to be critical of your own work. So you can still ask people, what do you think about this? Can I do something different?
Mm-hmm.
It depends how they react to the answer.
Yeah, so you have to usually give them a very soft insult first and see how they take it, and then you can sort of escalate from there and see. Play it by ear. Don't immediately jump to, well, you should probably burn that, but the next one will be better. It's not as constructive. Even though it's sometimes.
Again, I got nothing. you might be one of the worst people I've ever met, Spud, but it's okay.
Well, thank you.
My worst friend.
That means a lot.
Yeah, see, I thought I was Yom's worst friend, but you're much worse than I am. Jeez. All right. Well, thanks. That's actually good advice, Spud. All kidding aside. And I guess that'll take us to... we should just call this section Mike's Question of the Week, because Mike's the only one that ever asked this question, so practically the only one. And he actually asked us a pretty interesting one this week. Has gaming led you to places or activities where you never would have gone before? And you ask yourself, what am I doing here? For example, I went to a cake decorating shop to buy terrain because I read online that it was a cheap and easy place to find trees, street signs, etc. And as I was waiting in line next to the caterers and bakers, I took a step back and went, you know, how did I end up here? And you know, that's really, really true. A lot of us end up in strange places doing stuff for the hobby. I haven't really experienced this myself. I'm far too lazy to go hunting for, like, weird odds and ends at non-specialty shops. I just go to a gaming store and order the terrain stuff I want or whatever. But I can definitely see, you know, ending up in a place you didn't expect while trying to look for something to do something, you know, a project or a you know, a miniature that you had in mind. Antoine, what about you?
I made you go to a Hobby Lobby in the States once to look for stuff. So
but it was a hobby store.
Yeah, but it was not a miniature hobby store.
True, but it wasn't a cake decorating shop either,
for
right?
Sure, so. For sure. But it was like a craft booking
store. There's a cake decorating section at Hobby Lobby.
Yeah, there's one.
Oh, is there? I had no idea.
So, you did go to some places that was not just a pure miniature hobby store, at least once. Outside of that, I've
got... I mean, the only place I remember you sending me to was a lingerie store once, and that was just awkward.
For a hobby.
It's for another hobby. For his Seraphon hobby.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I had to look sexy while I was dressed up as a furry and Antoine was tickling my feet. I mean, that's fun.
I don't want that picture.
Imagine it, Yom. Imagine it.
It doesn't have to be just a mental picture, Yom.
Be strong, Yom.
So the guys whose avatar is a bunny.
But yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's true. We don't know what's going on below that image.
Critters. Yeah, because you only get the top half of the bunny. The bunny could be naked.
That's very true.
Having his feet dick him. I don't know. You don't know.
That would actually make that picture make a lot of sense.
Should I message Jen and tell her she ruined this episode? just right out, like, because of you. I have to edit an hour long or hour and a half long podcast about, you know, tickling bunnies and stuff.
Oh, jeez.
Antoine.
I went to, like, a dollar store in the... I obviously Biblo. Biblo is, like, a little thing that you put on the shelf. Thing that you put on shelves.
Knickknacks.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Something that, like, your mom would buy and put on a shelf to look... To decorate
yep.
the
yeah,
yeah. So you can always do the dollar store knickknacks section. Mm.
Another place you can go. I've stumbled a lot too often into the plumbing section of the home hardware and stuff like that.
Sure, for pipes. Yeah,
and not for the plumbing of the house. Yeah. So there's that. Most dollar stores, they have plants and stuff like plastic plants. Stuff like that. And the strangest place I got was, and I will say first, I don't like the term in English, but I went to a sugar bush. That's the
I'm not touching that.
The forest, yep, no, that's good. The forest that you find around a sugar shack.
Yes, yeah, maple tree forest where they tap.
Yeah, it's the name of it. So when you're in the mountainy area and there's maple trees and stuff like that on the side of the road, the ditch is often creusé.
Dig.
The ditch are redigged every year and it opens up the side of the mountain and you have roots coming out. And they dry up with the sun, and you can use that to make really cool trees and bushes on the bases.
I've seen people use those, and I didn't realize that's where they were getting them, but that makes total sense.
Yeah.
Wow, I never would have thought, yeah.
I passed 2 or 3 Secret hours in a ditch this year
to
pick up stuff like that. Yeah, I have three bags of those in my workshop right now.
Well, I know where to go when I need...
Sugar bush.
I stopped myself because there's just no good way that was going to end that sentence.
Let's steer us back in the conversation. Pet stores, you can find like bags of sand, rocks, and little knickknacks that go into like your fish tanks. Mm-hmm. So plants and little like owls or whatever. So yeah, you could look also for
Little castles and stuff you can use for statues.
Yeah, sometimes you will find like a Greek statue that was under the sea or something like that. So you can use that for a table or something.
And the scale works fine for Warmaster and other like 6 to 10 millimeter games. The castle almost are in scale. So
so I've for me, if I can weigh in, so I have two answers, I guess, to this question. One, I mean, I have been to all kinds of stuff, like especially when I'm looking for materials for terrain, when I'm going to work on a terrain project, like if I'm doing sci-fi terrain, you actually go to like one of those organizer stores. And they just have like 1,000 different designs of plastic bins and boxes and things. And you will find something that's in approximately the shape and with the texture that you need to do all that. I go to every dollar store I can possibly find from different chains, because every dollar store has different stock and they will have different interesting things. I end up going to HomeSense a lot. I've been told that's only a Canadian chain. So if there's any Americans listening, it's like a place where you get like fake fancy antiques and stuff, but it's not actually anything antique. It's like a chain store. But I go there to get like all of my army transports and stuff. I go to the beads section at Michael's whenever I need tokens for Infinity. Since I started playing Infinity, I've probably spent $150 on beads. I'm also really bad with money, incidentally. Yeah, so that's my first answer. But my second answer is, I feel like Mike answered his own question, because he concludes with, you know, as I was waiting in line and I took a step back and wondered how did I end up here. But he says, I went to a Kickstarter creating shop to buy terrain because I read online that it was cheap and easy place to find trees, tree signs, etc. And that's basically all there is to it. I mean, when you're in this type of hobby where it is like, and you're doing creative bits and pieces, and I would say, especially when you're doing terrain, because terrain to a large extent is just an exercise in scrounging. Don't really think too hard about where you're going to end up, or don't judge too hard where you're going to find. Just treat, I mean, like literally, like what do I need? Where is a place where I could find something like that? And just go. I mean, if it's a logical place to get it, it's a logical place to get it. And I mean, stop in at random stores. You'll be shocked at some of the stuff that you'll find there. You know, if you want, like if you're just looking for machined bits and pieces, you know, if you want wooden bits and pieces, try a cooking store. You'll probably find like cutting boards and racks and things like that. And you'll probably find some sort of like, I don't know, spice rack you can turn into a building with reasonable modifications. Just, you know, don't limit your horizons.
Always be on the lookout.
Yeah, exactly. Try different places. You'll be surprised. Most of the really cool terrain that I see is I scrounged this on some level from something that someone found in an odd place. And yeah, like I said, just don't think about it too much.
Well, I don't actually know if you listen to the show, Spud.
Listened to about half a dozen episodes.
Okay. So I don't know if you remember the one with Brandon Palmer.
No.
Okay. So he's a well-known army painter in the States, and he sculpts a big display board every year for Adepticon. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think I've seen the boards.
Yeah, so he did one that was in an egg chair. He did one that was in like a skeleton and a throne with like a whole undead city built around it with an army. It's like their army display boards. Mm-hmm. And this year he did the Golden Throne.
Okay.
So he sculpted like the Emperor's Golden Throne with the Emperor on it and whatever. And we had this whole long discussion about him going to, you know, antique shops looking for cherubs and bits and pieces for the chair. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going to Michael's and buying like, you know, 25 of the same rocket kit just for bits and pieces. So yeah, you can end up anywhere, I guess.
Yep.
So yeah, I guess that answers Mike's question. So on that note, I guess we'll take a quick break and then come back with the long awaited main topic, Captain Spud.
Can't wait.
The here and the now. Okay. Be right back, geeks. And we're back. All right. So the moment you've all been waiting for, I give you Captain Spud.
That is the appropriate response.
Wow. I think you were trying to go for the whole excited crowd.
Yeah, sound. I totally got crowd off of that. It was good. Well done.
I don't know what that was.
A minus. All right.
I'll give you an A for effort.
Better than nothing. Come on. Sonic.
Yeah, it was good. Good. You're like the guy from the Police Academy movies.
Oh, wow.
You love me.
He was also in Spaceballs, wasn't he?
Yeah. I'll take that.
Yeah.
No,
he's
good. He's just good, right?
Oh, yeah. He was on a show.
It was on a talk last show year.
Yeah, he did a late night show. Yeah. The bleeps, the sweeps, and the creeps. Yep. Spud, mm-hmm. Why don't you tell us a little about your history as a sculptor? Like, when did you start sculpting? What got you into it? What'd you start with?
I started sculpting when I was probably like 15-ish. I was playing Warhammer 40K at the time, because that is an appropriate game for a 15-year-old to play. It started out with just simple conversions, like, hey, you know, because like they give you all the extra bits, and then you're like, oh, I want to swap this gun onto this guy, and then ooh, put this arm on this guy, and sometimes the things didn't fit, and so I had to learn how to like just, you know, really really basic, and now I have to like turn the arm a different way and sculpt in some extra detail to fill in what is now a crack and things like that, and it moved up from there, like, oh, this guy should have a totally different arm, and this guy, and like all of these initial ones look awful. Obviously, because first time, but you know, it got things rolling, and then eventually I moved and kind of lost my group and got more into like the modeling side because I didn't know anybody where I moved to.
Right.
And so then I started like a Nurgle demon army, which was interesting.
Sculpting paradise.
And then so I primarily, again, it was just a pretty heavy, like, again, just on the conversion side of things. I wasn't actually really sculpting it initially. I had my Chaos Space Marine army was built entirely out of normal Space Marines and plastic skeletons. And then I just sort of mix and match so that they were all just, like, Space Marines that didn't have any skin, which was fun. But, again, a little more putty being applied to the models and more, you know, things actually being created. And eventually I decided that for all of my demons, I didn't like all of the like rotting and falling apart demons, since that wasn't really the aesthetic that I had been going for. And to be honest, I don't really know what the aesthetic I ended up going for was, because it was this, I made these like creepy but super adorable like slug monsters with like one big eye and like whatever. And I wasn't using green stuff because it was really expensive because it was a GW product. My hardware store had like an actual, because like green stuff, for anybody who doesn't know, started out as some sort of plumbing sealant. I'm not entirely sure on the details, but somehow or another, you would mix it together and it would stop water from popping out of something. I'm really scant on the details. Maybe you put it in the threads of the pipe, maybe? I don't know.
Well, no, there is such a thing as plumber's putty, which they put around like seals and stuff
So
to keep it from leaking.
So that's what Nevatite started out as. Nevatite is the brand name of green stuff. But basically, so I ended up with this like blue and white putty that you would mash together and it would turn white. The blue just disappeared. It was interesting. But anyways, it was for my intents and purposes, it was a knockoff green stuff. And I basically made like scratch sculpted demons out of that. It was really neat. It was really fun. And that just totally just got me rolling. And I made a whole bunch of really awful models for about the next 10 years, and then all of a sudden I stopped making awful models and I started making models that I kind of liked.
So that's when you lost your hair.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, because they were really awful basically until I got out of uni. Actually, it, like as much as I was joking, like it seriously, the timeline does track. Like as soon as I got out of university, I got really good at sculpting and I had no hair left. And it's continued to progress in that way. But yeah, so, years and years and years of bad models. But, you know, you make the bad model and you learn from it. And you make the bad model and you learn from it. And I would say, if I had to say my biggest breakthroughs, I know what my second one is. I'm trying to remember what the first one was. At one time I accidentally sculpted a nice-looking face, and that was shocking to me because I had previously avoided sculpting faces. It was a model of, it was a scratch sculpted Ashlyn DeLise model for War Machine. And I, using a method that I now look back and I realize there's no way that should have yielded a good face, somehow ended up making a good face. And it was really encouraging and it made me keep trying to sculpt faces. Because the next one I made immediately afterward was horrible again because the process I was using was awful and should not have been making good results. It was just an accident.
That's funny.
But because I had had that bit of encouragement, I kept looking and I got more and more frustrated. And eventually I So because again, if I can just, before I move on to that, one of the big frustrations throughout my career, like I have literally never met another sculptor. There's just nobody sculpts. And at the time, I mean, I hadn't really been able to find much of like a community on the internet yet. I mean, I'm sure they were out there. I just wasn't really looking that hard. Eventually I found this website called Miniature Mentor, which is primarily a site that does painting tutorials. They get like actual like professional painters in, and they do like really nice photography with a really annoying narrator badgering them with stupid questions. But then they paint an entire model. But then at some point they've gotten a couple of sculptors in. And I just spent $30 and I got some videos of a guy named James Van Shake. He's done a bunch of Heraclix models and a ton of other stuff. I just, for the first time in my entire life, because I was getting so frustrated with my own inability to progress, I watched someone else do it, and it was just like, it was a revelation. Just, I'm like, oh my god, that's how you're supposed to do that. Oh my god, that's how you're supposed to hold that tool. Oh my god, that's how you're supposed to apply the putty. Like, it just, like, everything, instantly, I'm like, that's what I was doing wrong. That's what I was, it was amazing. I cannot recommend highly enough, like, that website or literally anything else. If you can find any way to watch a very, very long progression of someone else sculpting, that is pretty much like the only way to know how to learn how to do it properly. Because like, even like the stuff I post, right, where I as I finish all of the projects that I do, I post them on my blog along with like dozens or hundreds of photos of all the progress. But if I were in the reverse position and I was trying to learn to sculpt from that, it wouldn't work, because you can't see, because like when I take my photos, I have to put my tools down and then take the photo with my sculpting hand. So you can never actually see from photos any of the technique, and the technique is the hard part.
Right.
So watching someone else do it was just, it was amazing. And I just instantly got a lot better because, and I'll just stress, it's not that like, you know, you can just come out of the blue, watch a thing and be amazing. Like, I mean, I had learned a lot, but sort of run into a brick wall, and this just sort of let me bypass a lot of the problems that I was having. For anyone who has been trying and has had frustration, like, that's absolutely the next step. At some point, just watch someone else go, and it's amazing. And then I've gotten another one from there called a guy named Aragorn Marks. He used to be a confrontation sculptor. He's the one the encouragement I got from that one sort of pushed me toward going from green stuff into Fimo, which has also been, that was basically my third revelation, because oh my god, Fimo is amazing. I guess that's really the only real lesson to take away from my particular journey is, wow, actual formal training is really helpful. Just like actually having someone show you rather than you trying to puzzle stuff out, because there is a hard cap on what you can teach yourself. So,
you see, this is interesting to me because I actually thought you had an art background.
I do. I've been drawing dinosaurs and monsters since I was 3. And then I used to paint. I don't really anymore. I got really frustrated with it around the time I was leaving university. But not like minis, but like paintings. I did that. And then I started, you know, I used to draw. I drew comic books all when I was in superheroes and stuff, all when I was in grade school and high school. I've always drawn and I've always painted and I've always done that kind of thing. But sculpting was very different because, like, I don't know, my painting was just sort of a natural progression out of the drawing and stuff. But I mean, I don't actually have any like formal training. Like, I mean, I went to, my mom sent me to a lot of like art for 6-year-olds and watercolors for 8-year-olds and charcoal drawing for 9-year-olds when I was little. But it was all like at the community center, and we had, the class always had to move at the rate of the slowest 9-year-old. And let me tell you, the slowest 9-year-old is pretty bad at charcoal. So did not get very much out of any of those. But, my education is all in, like, computer stuff, but it's just, it's always been a hobby, and it continues to be a hobby, and I'm really happy with it, but I'm naturally amazing at it. It's one of the many things I'm amazing at, so it's, you know.
Oh, jeez. Your modesty. Your modesty astounds
and
me.
Handsome.
I know. It will never be, take the best part of it.
I don't remember if I ever got back to a point there, but we'll just say that I have really bad attention deficit disorder, so I sometimes go off on weird tangents and then just never remember what I was talking about originally. It's really fun.
We were just talking about you, so it was
okay. Okay, that's good.
We were just talking about your history.
Did I answer so the question?
Yeah, okay. and more.
Well, great. Okay.
No, it's all good. Now I'm looking at the notes and wondering where I go from here. Antoine, ideas?
Still awake, Antoine? Okay, good. Yep. Good.
So, as you went along, you got better and better and better. What got you really into doing full figures? What part?
Well, it was interesting because, like, I almost started doing full figures because, like, the conversions I was doing very early on were very, very, very minimal. Like, the underside of an arm where I had to cut it to make it fit onto a particular body or something like very, very tiny things. And, like, gap filling and then just sort of recreate the texture. Like, oh, I had to cut a hole in some fur, so put the fur back and that kind of thing. And then, yeah, like, almost the first thing I tried were these, the slug monsters, and they worked great. Which, in retrospect, I look back, they worked great because they were really big. It is so much easier to sculpt big models than small models. So I guess that's another tip that I would throw out there, is that if someone is just learning, don't worry about making your first few full sculpts actually, like, fit into a game that you play. Make bigger ones, like, sculpt a 40mm model or a 50mm model, or just whatever. Like, hell, sculpt an action figure. Like, you'll learn much more about the technique if you're not fighting against the scale. And that's why I think, like, my very first full sculpts when I was 15, I still look back at them now, and I would not make a much better, like, if I were to, the first one was kind of terrible. The second one that I did about a month later, which is a slightly different slug monster, is probably almost as good as I would do now, but just because it was big, so I had the room to spare. But no, then I stopped doing full models kind of for a very long time. I just got back into doing conversions. Like, once that gave me the confidence to do heavier modifications of models I had spent money on, I guess. And it wasn't until, I mean, honestly, I don't know why I started doing it again when I was older. I guess mostly any of the conversions that I do or the sculptures that I do, it's pretty much just, I think a thing should exist and the universe has not solved that problem for me, so I have to take it into my own hands. So, that's it.
Because you're so modest.
Yeah, we're pretty good at the dramatic pauses tonight. Yeah.
It's like, nobody can do it right. I will take charge.
Well, the universe isn't awesome enough, so, someone has to correct
it. You said that it's easier to sculpt larger models, but what about the product you're using? Is it does it change a lot? Like, let's say, curing time? Since you work on a larger surface, how does this work?
Oh, yeah. So if you're sculpting in putty, any kind of putty, so like green stuff, brown stuff, Procreate. I actually don't know what the name of the white stuff that I used to use was. I don't know. Anyway, any of those epoxy putties, that they make it almost impossible to make a large model, because the time, because basically, like, let's say you're sculpting a leg and you get to the upper leg. So you've let's say you've done a basic layer of just, like, basically like the skeleton, and you're going to actually go put the muscles on. The time that it will take you to roll out the pieces for all the muscles in the leg and then put them on and make them stick to the other pieces and everything, like, you will, by the time all the meat is in place, it's going to have cured to the point on a very, like, I'm talking about, like, if you were to do, like, an action figure size model, right? Like, what, like 6 or 8 inches tall, right? It's going to take you so long just to put the material on, if you're putting it on in the right way, because you're not supposed to just throw all of the material on all at once. You're supposed to put it on a piece at a time, and it's going to cure, and you're not going to be able to put any detail on it. So green stuff really only works for models up to, say, 30 or 40 millimeters tall. Anything taller than that, you basically have to use clay that doesn't have a limit on your working time. And that's one of the main reasons that I primarily do work in clay now. Like, I use Vimo. Sculpey is very similar. There's tons and tons of clays that you can use. But they are really the only way that I know to do the bigger models that are easier to do. So, like, I guess those are my two tips, I guess, to start. Do bigger models, and because you're doing bigger models, basically start out with a clay instead of a putty. Now, to be clear, like, I'm not like a material snob. There are a lot of sculptors who I like, in, you know, because I eventually did sort of drift into some sculpting communities online, and they were like, it was actually kind of neat because I got, there were like professional sculptors who were there and I could just chat with them, which was really interesting. But a lot of them they hate green stuff. They're like, it's useless. You should never use it. It has no practical purpose and it's garbage. And I don't think that's true either, because it's, I actually use it even in my FEMO, because it's actually how you make the FEMO stick to the wire armatures. But even without that, like, when I do conversions, I find it's almost like, if I'm doing like an Infinity model and I'm giving him one new arm, it's really hard to make FEMO stick to a metal model that you're starting with. Whereas green stuff sticks fantastically. So when I'm just making modifications to existing models, I primarily just still work in green stuff, because the advantages of the FEMO aren't worth all of the frustration of trying to make it adhere to the model. So
that's good advice, actually. Good.
So.
Okay. So why don't we maybe talk a little bit about what you use to do your sculpting?
Oh.
So you talked about some materials, you talked about the epoxy putty and the clays.
Oh, and just random thing, if anybody's trying to sculpt with FEMO, don't make the mistake I made at first when I bought some FEMO for the Michaels near my house, and I started trying to sculpt with it, and it was a nightmare, and I couldn't figure out how you were supposed to do it. FEMO, so yeah, I'll get right at the tools, it's just the one thing. If you, FEMO is too hard to sculpt with, hard, like tough. There's a second product that they sell called Mix Quick that is super, super soft, and the idea is you're supposed to put a combination of the two. I use like roughly 50-50. And but the Mix Quick is really hard to find. Like, I have never found it in a store. I've always had to buy it online. So it wasn't until I actually like asked someone, they pointed that out to me. So if anyone else out there is starting on, you want to get FEMO, definitely find, like, I'm told you can get it in stores. I've just never personally found it. Alternately, if you can get Sculpey is pre-softened. I actually find it a little too soft, but it's not too, too bad. I would use Sculpey over FEMO if you can't get Mix Quick, for example.
Okay.
But yeah, so definitely if you are going to follow the clay route, make sure that you good. Even if you're going to get like even some other brand, just make sure that if there's any additives you need, that you actually have those. Because yeah, that was a really frustrating 2 weeks when I was trying to make raw hard FEMO actually turn into things. It was a nightmare. So, but yes, tools. So primarily, anytime that you're working with either putty or clay, primarily there's you're going to be using one of two things. You're going to be using metal tools, and you're going to be using silicone tools. So for metal tools, there's a ton of brands that sell them. My original set was the Privateer Sculpting set is actually quite good. They've got it comes with three tools, two of which are useful. There's a pointy hook, which is great. Well, I don't use that as much anymore because the pointy hook, for reasons that are too complicated to get into here, is actually not very useful for clay because the clay is too soft. But the hook is very handy when you're working with green stuff because it's tough, and so the hook won't just slice right through it. So you can actually like shape with it without destroying your material. But the main tool, there's a piece. It's got like a, call it the blade end, even though it's like a not sharp knife blade on one side, and then I'm going to use a word, and everybody gets to giggle once. The hoe tool. Although I guess with you guys being French, that's not going to be as funny for you. But basically it's like a gardening hoe. So it's a flat piece, but it's not a flat piece coming straight out of the end of the handle. It's sort of like right. Perpendicular. And so,
that's like, sorry.
No, that's, you were saying,
I was going to say that's like the original GW sculpting.
Yeah. Tool. And that's the thing, like almost any sculpting set you find will have the combination of those two. It will have a hoe tool with some sort of flat, not sharp blade on the other side. And to be honest, you could basically, that is the only metal tool I use on a regular basis. The hook is okay when I'm doing certain things. And I've got a few other ones that I use for selected things. But like, 95% of the time, if I'm using a metal tool, it's just that thing. The one I use now is from a different brand. I think it came from an Army Painter kit. But I'm looking at the Army Painter site now, and I don't see this exact one, so maybe they went with a different design at a certain point. But anyway, it doesn't really matter. Like, if you can find a tool, if you can find a sculpting set that has metal bits and has something that you can squish flat on and something with a flat part that follows the handle, that's pretty much all you need to do your bulk shaping. So that's primarily what the purpose of the metal tools are for. So you put the clay on, or the, I'm just to keep things simple, I'm just going to refer to clay, but a lot of this pretty much applies the same to putty. But so you put the clay on with metal tools, and then basically they're just used to put the bulk shapes in place. Because you don't immediately just put the material on and start sculpting detail. Some people do, and that's why a lot of sculpting looks terrible. But you have to actually, the first step is make sure all of the shapes are in the right place, that there are masses where there need to be. If you're sculpting like skin, you have to make sure the muscles are in the right place, whatever. And they don't need to look smooth. You just need to have the general idea of, well, yep, there's enough meat there. There's not enough meat over here. Let's put more meat there. And that's what all the metal tools are for. Once all of the meat is in the right place, you can use the metal tools to do some basic smoothing. But the problem with the metal tools is because they're very hard, they're going to leave marks in everything they touch. So you almost cannot get a totally smooth surface with a metal tool. So that's where you transition to silicone tools. So the main brand that gets used is called Color Shapers, or usually people refer to them as Clay Shapers. And basically they're just it's the handle and the bezel of like a standard like miniature painting paintbrush. But instead of a brush at the end, there's like a little piece of shaped silicone, and they come in, I think, 5 or 6 basic shapes. Like with the sculpting tools, there are lots of shapes available, but I only use a couple. There's a round one, so it's like a cone, like with a bit of a soft tip on the end. That one is really good for rolling over things to smooth them out. Basically, all of these are for smoothing for the most part. There's one that's just a flat, like a rectangle that comes out, and that one, actually really hard to describe. This is where I was going to, like, it's really hard through anything other than watching someone do it to actually describe the technique, so I'm mostly going to skip that. But I'm just going to say that's handy for a lot of things, which you'll see if you try them out. And then the last one, the one that I use for most things, is the hardest shape to describe. It's called an angle chisel, and how the hell do I describe this? It's got
I don't know if you really need to describe
this. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. If you're buying color shapers or clay shapers, get the angle chisel. And again, it's like 80% of the stuff you do will be with that, because you can use that one. This one has a point on it, and you can primarily use that one to actually carve out detail. So that's what I use to do faces. Mm-hmm. Because it has flat parts, it has pointy parts, it has edges. Like, it's with just the one, it's great. So the idea with the silicone tools is, because they are soft, they won't leave nearly as many marks in the material when you're going. So you can just drag them over things and roll them over things, and they will actually leave it soft and smooth, and pretty and beautiful and lovely. I mean, there's all kinds of other stuff that you can get that is super handy. I wrote a whole bunch into the show notes, and I'll rattle it off really quickly. Wine corks to mount stuff on. 20-gauge aluminum wire to actually build armatures out of, although I'll get to that in a moment why you may not need that. Super glue, hobby clippers, tiny needle nose pliers, again, if you're going to be making armatures. A pin vise is great. An X-Acto blade, but not with the stupid pointy ones. Those are useless. You want the ones with a round end. Those are really, really, really useful for modeling. They do so many things that you can't do otherwise. A vinyl placemat to work on. Don't work on wood. Don't work on a surface that you use for anything else. You don't want to get bits of food left over from your desk in your clay, because it'll pick it up. So I just go to the like Canadian Tire, and I buy like a stack of vinyl placemats, and when I sculpt I just throw one on the table, and that way it keeps it clean and it's a non-stick surface. So it like especially if you're working with putty sticks to things, it won't stick to a vinyl placemat, so you don't have to worry about that. Although in my case, it's also my computer desk, and so I usually have wads of putty stuck to the underside of my keyboard for when I put it back down afterward. And the last thing is, if you are working with clay, definitely want a decent oven. A lot of people can get away if you have a newer like toaster oven that you can actually pretty reliably control the temperature. That's okay. Otherwise, I'm not going to describe it. A halogen oven. Just go search for one of those and get them on like Amazon for like $80. They're fantastic.
Yeah, they're like small convection
ovens. Yeah, pretty much. They're amazing. It was. That's another thing. I could not find that in a store. I had to buy it online. But yeah, so all that stuff is useful and will come up here and there. But like 90% of the time or 95% of the time, if you're working on clay or putty, you're going to be using one or two metal tools and two or three clay shapers. Clay shapers, incidentally, come in sizes like brushes do, which are actually the same sizes. So primarily you're going to be, most miniature work, you're going to be doing the size zeros. If anyone wants to go shopping for them, you can get a multi-kit of, what are they called? Like size zero firm, because they come in like soft, firm, and like super hard. The super hard is not useful. You want like the middle grade, which is called firm. They're gray instead of like white or black. Yeah, and they just come in a bunch of shapes, and they're fantastic. You can also, like, I have a couple of larger ones that I don't use too much. They're, like, what are they, fours? Anyway, it's not that important. Size zero firm, that's all you need to know. You can get a multi-pack for, like, $20. They're great. And so, yeah, most of the stuff is you do your bulk shapes with metal, and you do your soft shapes with, and your fine, you know, facial detailing and stuff with an angle chisel, and it's good. It's good.
That's a lot to take in, but
it is.
We'll write everything the show notes for the listeners. But
yeah, can we just put all of my notes into your show notes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Cool.
We'll have all the links and everything.
Yeah, if you're following along,
this work for nothing. They can follow along exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you want me to go through all the other stuff?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Okay. So. We started you actually just mentioned armatures,
yes.
Right? Maybe you can explain what armatures are for people
who don't know. Okay, so if you're doing conversions, you often don't need to worry about armatures because you're going to be putting detail on top of a metal model or a plastic model or a resin model that has all sorts of structure already. But if you're fully adding to a model, like you're totally chopping an arm off and making your own arm, or if you're actually making an entire model from scratch, you can't just lump clay up. You actually need like a skeleton to put all the softer materials on to hang them on. So that's where armatures come in. Armatures are kind of a pain, but they're if you watch one of the videos that I referenced earlier, the one with James Van Schaik, he calls the armature the most important stage of sculpting, because if you screw up the model's skeleton, if you put the wrong proportions in, if you put the wrong pose in, something like that, there is no way that you can fix it in the later stages. The skeleton has to be done right, otherwise the person will have the wrong proportions, or their arm will be poking in a weird direction that a person can't do, or you know, anything like that. So I will say it's the most boring stage of sculpting. I hate making armatures, but I can see where he's coming from or when he talks about that, because yeah, I've had a lot of models that I've made where I've gotten to the very end and I realize, oh, one of the arms is longer than the other one, and I didn't notice that, and there's no way to fix it except to scrap the arm, and it sucks. So when you're starting out, you can pick up... So there are armatures that you can buy. I generally don't like them, but again, they'll be in the show notes if anybody wants to check them out. There's a company called Hassle Free that makes sort of like fully muscled out. Well, not fully muscled. The idea is you would still put a little bit of your own material on top of them, but they're fairly muscled out, and they come in a couple of different poses. And basically, it's just like a sort of skinny but still with visible muscle tone figure without a face. And the idea is you pose it slightly and then you sculpt on top of it. I don't like those because then you can't put deep detail, because eventually you'll bump into the metal, right?
Right.
So to avoid that problem, you can get into Reaper puts out a bunch called the Reaper Advanced Dollies. They also do a version of the muscly ones, although the Reaper ones are horrible because the muscles on theirs actually pop almost all the way out, so they're totally useless. The Advanced Dollies are basically just they're just cast in, you know, pewter or silver metal or whatever they're calling it now. And they're the basic proportions of a human skeleton, but there's no muscles or anything on them. It's just, they're essentially like wires.
This is like a wireframe.
Yeah, basically. And they're much better. The problem with them is because they're so thin, they end up being very brittle. So if you're going to be using those, you work very, very slowly and hold your breath anytime you're going to turn anything. And then you'd be very careful. And like, you have to be very conscious that you can't like wobble the same elbow back and forth too many times. Otherwise, you'll make it brittle and it'll snap off. And just like you're constantly watching that while you're working with them. I find it too nerve wracking to use those. I've tried. It's just, it wasn't my thing. So that's why personally, when I do it, I twist my own armatures out of the 20 gauge aluminum wire that I mentioned before.
Okay.
I don't recommend that your first time out. If you're learning, I would recommend some of the dollies, unless you're just being cheap, which I definitely can sympathize with, because I was also really cheap when I was start getting into this. But if you can afford the like $20,
I'm sure you're still cheap.
Yeah. But yeah, so twisting them out, if you are going to twist your own wire armatures, which is basically just you start with the wire, you get some pliers, and you essentially like, you just keep holding the wire up against, there's a guide that I linked, by a really good sculptor called Patrick Keith. He does a lot of work for Reaper and some other companies. And basically it's just like a PDF document. You print it at actual size, and that will give you a 30 millimeter skeleton, a 40 millimeter skeleton, and so on. And it, you just kind of hold your wire up against the page and very carefully twist it so that it matches all of the size and the shape of everything in the guide. It's a pain in the ass to do, and honestly, you could probably just spend an entire weekend twisting armatures and doing nothing else, and you would still learn doing that. Super boring. I don't recommend it, but you could. Actually, his whole guide there is fantastic, because it talks about other things like mounting them and stuff. Great, great guide. So definitely check that out in the notes. But yeah, so,
I'm checking an example on his site, and it doesn't look simple.
Yeah, no, it's definitely more advanced. But if you're going to, again, if you aspire to eventually get into like proper sculpting, at some point you're going to have to transition into using wire. That's, well, actually, you know, I will back up from that, because again, in the video with James Van Schaik, he uses Reaper Advanced dollies. So maybe no, maybe you never have to. I recommend it, but options. So it's definitely hard. I wouldn't do it right out of the bat unless you're confident. So basically, we're all conclude with that. So yeah. The next bit. So at this point, I'm literally just reading down the notes that I prepared.
That's okay. You're doing such a great job.
Yeah, of course I am.
You read so well.
So the next section that I decided to share with everybody, so pretty much this is just going to be my talk. So yeah, since there's not a lot I can do on technique, these are going to be like resources and things that are going to be available. We're going to take a bit of a sharp turn here. We're just going to get into, these are the anatomy references that I'm going to recommend, because most people when they're sculpting are going to be sculpting people. And people look a certain way. And there's one thing, I don't know if any of you, there's a movie called Galaxy Quest. I don't know if you've seen that. I've made cultural references to Yom before, and he's just kind of blinked because he's the wrong language. Yom did not know who Mr. Rogers was. That is horrible. That is just horrible.
Nope. But now I know. Now I know.
Yeah.
But,
do you at least know who Mr. Dressup is?
No.
You see what you see? This is why they are wrong inside. They lack these things.
Wow.
But anyway,
I don't know if we can be friends anymore.
There's a movie called Galaxy Quest, which is making fun of Star Trek for anyone who hasn't seen it. And there's a great line. But Tim Allen is talking crap to the big villain at the end of the movie. And he's like, could they're pretend actors from a pretend sci-fi TV show and la 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 la, complicated story. But then he's like, he's talking to the guy and he says, you're bluffing. And basically he says, it doesn't take a good actor to tell a bad one. And that's how he knows that the villain is bluffing. And that's a really insightful statement for such a dumb but really good movie. Because taking it back to anatomy, people look a certain way. And it doesn't take an artist to be able to look at a painting or a drawing or a sculpture and say, that is wrong. Mm-hmm. We often don't know why it's wrong. You actually do need to have a little bit of anatomy training in order to figure out how to fix it. But anyone you show bad anatomy to will be able to tell that it's bad anatomy, which is why it's really important to learn anatomy if you're going to be sculpting or drawing or doing whatever. But because, yeah, if you screw it up, everyone will know and you can't hide it. So there's some guides that I'm going to recommend. They're done by this webcomic artist named Sela Squid. She does a webcomic called Manly Men Doing Manly Things. And she draws a lot of muscly guys in this comic, and she did a couple of anatomy guides, and they are fantastic because they don't just show you, like, here's where this muscle is and here's where this muscle is. She actually says, like, and then if you were to bend the arm up, this muscle would bulge this way. And if you were to twist the arm over, these muscles would now go in it. And like, it's, she explains not just where the pieces are, but how they move. And it's fantastic. And it's really, really useful for that reason for sculpting, because when you sculpt people, that, like, when you look at most anatomy references, it's always just like cadavers just standing there with their arms very straight. But that's not what your, most of your people are going to look like. So you, whether you use these guides or you do, you know, I always recommend do more research, but look for ones that emphasize people moving. And sometimes you're not just going to be using anatomy research. There's this great thing called Google. And if you're like, I need a person with their arm twisting a certain way, well, just Google that. You know, I need a person drawing a bow. Well, find pictures of people drawing bows. And that's what, it'll show you where all the muscles bulge out and stuff. So it's very, very handy. But yeah, anatomy is really, really important. And it's one of the things, the only way you will learn how to do anatomy properly is by doing lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of bad anatomy for many, many years. And eventually you'll stop doing bad anatomy. You just have to keep pounding your way through it, and you'll eventually just sort of learn where all the different bumps need to go and stuff. So, yeah, the next bit that I was recommending, so the General League, I already mentioned Miniature Mentor, fantastic site. I promise I'm not getting any money from them. It's just legitimately a really good site. The guy, it's a guy with a really, really, really expensive camera doing an incredible close up on 7 hours of sculpting.
Jesus.
And then a professional sculptor doing this while trying not to strangle the most annoying asshole. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear here. You can believe it if I'm not. He asks all of these horrible, stupid questions. Like to a certain extent, there's like, you know, you have to ask the stupid questions so that they were asked. But he like asks the stupid question over and over and over again. Ugh, it's hard not to punch the screen sometimes, but you grit your teeth. And you get through it, and you.
And this is scripted, or This is scripted?
No, right? No. It's just there's two guys in a room for 7 hours, and one of them does not know how to be alone in silence, so he chats the entire time. It's brutal, but it's worth it. I can't stress enough, it's worth it. You just and you can't turn the sound down because then you don't get the sculptor talking, so it's frustrating. Exactly.
Of course.
So anyway, they're annoying, but totally worth it. And they're like $30 for like a 7 hour class. It's fantastic. That's other than that. The last item that I would just put on the checklist if someone wants to like get into sculpting and, you know, whether you're starting from scratch or whether you're transitioning from whether you've done, conversions, get into a sculpting community because, like I've said, I've never met a sculptor, and even online, there are so few places where you can go where you can even like share your thoughts with other sculptors and get actual like useful criticisms. Like going back to one of my hobby tip from earlier. It's the most important thing is to actually have, if you're not capable of totally deconstructing all the mistakes that you made, and most people can't, I mean, I can't either. It's really, really helpful to have someone else tear it to pieces for you. Someone who does know better than you, but it's so hard to find that with sculpting. Like there's so many painting communities on the internet. And there's painting tutorials and there's painting everything because I just more people paint. It took me a really long time to find anywhere where I could get some expertise in sculpting. And unfortunately, like I would recommend the main community I learned from, but they've mostly disbanded, which is really frustrating. There's a site called Frothers that I've heard some good and bad things about. Apparently there's a bunch of really talented people there, but apparently they're total jerks. So I've never really gone, but that's what I've gotten. I opened one thread once, and there was a guy who was really rude to me. But helpful, but really rude.
Okay.
So, and then, yeah, other than that...
Didn't instantly connect with the guy? No?
No,
because
see, that's...
It was helpful and rude?
No. See, rude jerks, there can only be one rude jerk in a room at a time. Otherwise, there's friction, and it's not good.
This is true.
Time Cutler.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Oh my god, you've seen an English movie! That's amazing!
It was a.
Well, that's true. He's
French.
Yeah, I was gonna. Yeah, he's sort of French. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, so.
But yeah, okay.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, okay, so then the only place that I can really recommend, I'm sure there's more, it's just that it's so hard to find one right now. You could, Reaper has a sculpting community. They've got some okay sculptors. Not great, but I mean, if you are at a beginner level, they will be able to give you some advice. My only main problem with the Reaper forums for sculpting is everybody's too nice. If you've ever go on the Reaper forums and you post a mini, everyone will say great things about it. Even if your mini's terrible. And that's not helpful. Like, it may be nice, but nobody's going to get any better. Again, just going back to my hobby tip, which is really just my philosophy on hobbying in general. You need people who feel okay saying mean things. Like, the community I was a part of was called minisculpture.co.uk. Technically, they're still there, but most of the pros have left, so it's all just not great people. Now, but when the pros were there, like, they didn't hold back. If I made something that was terrible, like, even like I would post something I was reasonably proud of and they would crap all over it and it felt bad right away. But then I would stop and I'd be like, but you know what? They have a point. I actually did do a terrible job. They're like, that guy's right. There is a giant fingerprint on the side of that model, like totally clear as day. And I really should not have done that. And yeah, so that's my only real issue with Reaper. Everyone there is way too nice. Nobody wants to offend anybody. And so it's hard to, yeah, unless you like beg people to say mean things about your stuff, it's going to be hard to get like really useful feedback. So my search for useful sculpting communities continues. Yeah, man, if you ever find one, don't let it go. Don't let it go.
Maybe it just means you have to make your own.
Yeah, that's work.
Start a community, Spud. Be a community leader.
Can I just... We'll just start a community in the Geeks of the North comment section. We'll just take it over. You won't be able to actually like have any useful blogging or podcasting going on. It's just going to be a sculpting forum. Sorry.
With well done me. Telling that anyone who will try to join this community will just get like insulted by Spud.
Yeah, but it'll be useful.
And driven off. Yep.
It's for your own good.
I just want to help you, but you suck.
No. I want to help you, and you suck.
Yeah, not but, you know.
Exactly.
It's the same.
He won't turn you away because you suck. He'll just, you know, mock you because you suck.
Exactly. It's important. Yeah.
So.
To make a difference.
Yeah, don't put words in his mouth there, buddy.
No, not going there.
Sugarbush.
Yeah. Antoine, do you have something intelligent to add to this conversation?
In the community side, there's a Yao group I've been using a bit, and that was like years ago. I just checked, they're still active. It's not the most used one. It's, if you look in the Yao groups, it's One List Sculpting.
I've actually
it's
heard
all
of that.
A bunch of sculptor. Yeah. That's where I started I got all my first tips into sculpting.
Okay.
So they're less active now than they were back in the days when I used it more. Mm-hmm. But I there's still stuff from the previous weeks. So they're still
people. Because the nice ones, they went to the Reaper forum, and the mean one, they went to the Frother. That's why.
I've used Frothers. I even participated in some of their contests, but that forum is known for it's renowned, or
yeah,
there's probably another term for that, but they're known for their kind of angry and dry UK humor.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's just what I heard. So like, I at the time I didn't need it because I had the other forum, which was really good, but at this point when that, yeah, I keep almost going to Frothers, and then I keep not. I'm afraid. I'm so scared. I'm just a tiny potato inside.
Yeah, but it's harder to get resources for a sculptor because painting, a lot of people will paint in a little community, but that's sculpting. Like, yeah, like, little funny story. You know, Adeptica for the crystal brush, there was a sculpting category.
Mm-hmm.
There was one entry, so they canceled it. One entry. It was a good sculpt, but one entry.
I'll mail something down for you to bring next year.
Well, I am going to Adepticon, so...
Maybe you can do something for Paul.
entry by...
But yeah, the thing is, for your one golden rule, that you need a good tenter.
Yep. Wow, thanks, Yom. You jerk.
It's proximity with Spud. That's why I feel like that. I feel obligated to say things like that when I'm close to Spud.
I'm poison. I infect people.
I just want to point out that Yom actually recommended me to one of his clients because he couldn't take a contract. and Antoine was booked too, so they recommended he come talk to me to do his work.
Yeah, but we didn't know the guy, so... Nothing to do. Oh.
So that's you're terrible.
I trusted your ability to do that.
I hate you so much.
To go back to sculpting.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I often recommend, but I don't sculpt as much as Spud, but work in small section, especially with green stuff. Mm-hmm. Because, like you say, you end up with a thumbprint where you don't want it because you touched something that was finished and you went on continuing to work on other parts of the model. So work in sections,
yeah,
and work in parts and finish them, mm-hmm. bake them if you're using clay, let it dry if you're using putty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely when you're using putty, that was always what I used to, like, you do a little bit of work and, like, so many times, like, when I was in a rush, I'd be like, okay, so I finished this arm. Okay, now I'm going to go do the other arm. And I would stop myself and I would say, well, I really shouldn't. I should let the other one dry. But I'm like, but I really want to finish it today. And I would do the second arm and I would go back. And yeah, it would be totally destroyed. So you have to get over that mental block and just be able to say, nope, that's all I can do for 3 hours. And then you just, that's why I usually, back when I was doing a lot of conversions and green stuff, I would usually keep like 4 projects going at a time so that I had something else to do while I waited. Because if I just have the one project, I'm going to get bored and I'm going to not listen to myself and I'm going to destroy what I was doing. So yeah, totally.
It's good to know yourself.
Yeah. And I know that I don't listen.
No, but to have a different project that you like it. Spend 2 weeks work on 4 different projects, like little by little each night. Nice. And at the end, the 4 projects will be done all at the same time. But yeah, you skip from, even in painting, you do the same thing. You go from one to the other. That's the best way to restrain yourself from doing too much.
Oh man, with painting, I always do in a straight line. I can't put it down and go into something else. Ugh. Bothers me.
Okay, well, that's what I do.
Well, it's just that you're allowed to be wrong. It's just that because the paint, what the paint in my wet palette will dry if I don't finish the model now. I don't want to remix my colors.
I see what you did there.
what he has to learn somehow. Paul, come on. Who else is going to have the guts to teach Yom if it's not me?
Paul's pretty good at this.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at putting Yom in his place.
Okay, well then
but you're the guest here, so you know. Okay. I defer to your judgment.
I get to be mean to Yom today.
Yeah.
When are you going to be mean to me?
I'll be less mean to Yom today. Okay, so we covered all the tools, materials, some basic guidelines and references.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you can think of?
Well, just going on from the sort of the last bit about doing things in small pieces. Okay, I'll just do 2 relatively quick tips, and those will conclude the extent of what I can do through audio. Okay. The first one would be when you're putting material on. This is the biggest piece that I picked up from that first video that I watched with James Renchick, is you don't put, like, okay, let's say you're sculpting the chest muscles on a model. You don't just take a giant piece of putty and put it over the whole chest and then start carving muscles into it. You take a small shred of putty and you just take a tiny piece off and you put the tiny piece on. And okay, well, that's not enough. Okay, now let's take another piece, and you put another tiny piece on, and you put, and then you just keep going. You have to put very small pieces on, and then when you have enough in that spot, you move to the next spot, and you put more tiny pieces on. And like, you can make a tiny piece in the shape of a particular muscle if you want, or if you're trying to make wrinkles in cloth, you take a tiny, tiny, tiny little piece, and you put one wrinkle on, you smooth it in, and then it becomes a thing. Like, That was the biggest transition that I got out of that, is I used to just put like an entire shoulder plate on, or the entire piece to make a hand or something like that. And it's a hugely helpful adjustment, because when you have too much material on, you start to have to like hide it in places, and you end up with like people like huge sausage fingers, or like an okay looking hand, but you look underneath and like the palm, like the top of, like let's say there's a hand wrapped around something, the top looks okay, but you look underneath and a whole bunch of like this huge fat sausage piece underneath. So yeah, putting tiny pieces on, and like it's a little more boring. It takes longer to put the stuff on, but you won't end up with too much material anywhere. So you just put all the little pieces on, and you just sort of smush them together when you got enough.
So it's layering.
Yeah, basically you layer little bits on, and
you want to sculpt up and not carve.
Exactly. Yeah. You can carve a little bit when you're working in clay, but definitely. If you're working in putty, you never want to take material away. You only want to just put on as much as you need and then stop.
And that's a very good pointer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the other bit, so going back to thumbprints on models, you should never be in a situation where you can put a thumbprint in a model, because you should always be sculpting on some sort of handle. You don't, like, I used to sculpt models like on a base, like a, you know, GW base or a privateer base or something. A base doesn't give you enough space to hold the model. You will always have to brace it somewhere on the actual model, and that's where you're going to end up with fingerprints. That's where you're going to end up with like squishing models. Whether you're fully sculpting a model, or whether you're just, you know, doing a conversion of like, you know, adding a hand or something like that, always, always, always mount your model on wine corks. Or, you know, I've seen wooden handles. There's tons. Angel Giraldez, when he's painting, he glues the base to the top of a GW paint bottle. Like, there's so many things you can do, but you want to stick it onto something that's big enough to hold, so that you will never, ever, ever have to actually put your fingers on anywhere on the model. And it's a huge discipline to learn, because it's always really tempting. You're like, oh, if you're pushing on the front of the model, the natural instinct is to put something behind it to hold it from moving. But that's where you have to just like make sure it's well mounted, and that there's enough, the handle is big enough to sort of fill your hand, so that there's like a nice thing to grip. So yeah, wine corks are good, but there's so many things you can do. And yeah.
Yeah, what's the thing that Meg suggested? Jeweler's vise or something, I think.
Yeah, like big, I think so.
Like a big wooden handle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, with like a wing nut.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, there's so many ways you can do it, but like, it's just getting in the habit. And like, it's so, like, even for me, like when I'm doing conversions, I'm usually too lazy and I will just do them on a base. And I, to this day, continue to screw up my conversions because I'm too lazy to dismount the model off a base, put it on a proper mounting, do the conversion, then put it back on the base. Very, very lazy. So I end up with a lot of crap conversions even now.
Well, it's good that you know it.
Yeah. Yeah. It just means I have room to grow. More exactly. Hair needs to fall out.
Don't have a lot left.
No, that's good. I think we've covered everything that can possibly be covered in an audio sculpting episode.
Awesome.
So okay, next time I'm on the show, we'll need video.
Okay, no problem.
Okay.
That's coming, actually, so we'll talk. but maybe, so let's say people want to ping you and ask you questions or look at stuff you've worked on, where should they go?
It's a really good question. I don't know. I don't have any sort of contact method on my blog.
Okay. You're anonymous.
It's more just that I don't have room for it anywhere. I guess I could throw something up.
okay. Well,
I don't know. Like, I mean, I should have somewhere. God, wow, I really should have been prepared for that question.
Sorry.
I don't want to give away my email address. That's the problem.
No, that's fine.
Throw a comment on one of the posts on my blog, even if it's not relevant to what I'm talking about, and I will totally answer it. That's pretty much the best I can suggest. Or maybe I'll go throw a contact thing on my blog. That has, like, never come up before.
Make a Gmail or something that's just for the blog, that's not your personal email.
Exactly.
Yeah. Internet's hard, though.
But come on, your whiz, the con, you can figure that out.
You can even make it forward to your real email, so you don't have to go check the other account.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess.
Takes five minutes to set up.
Or maybe we could just tell people, if you want to reach Spud, it's like the A-team, right? You have a contact, so they can message us, and we will put them in contact with you.
Yeah, that's an option.
Middleman, geeks of the heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
putting a contact form on your web in your blog is so easy.
I know. It's WordPress. It's literally just look up an add-on, install, done.
Yeah, I can even give you the name of ours. So.
I'm just so lazy.
You just make a new page and add it to the menu. Like, jeez, Spud.
You work so hard on little stuff and then are so lazy.
That's how I have the attention span for the hard stuff. By complaining about and never doing the small, actually important and easy stuff. I'm rationing my attention and my time. Rationing.
Well, okay.
And not at all an excuse.
I just can't believe all the things we asked you, the thing that floored you is how do people contact you?
Well, can you give your blog address?
Oh, yeah, I guess I should have covered that at some point.
See your work.
So, my website is at www.captainspud.com.
And I think the blog's entitled Captain Spud is Amazing, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's truth
in advertising. Yeah. Well, if you put something on the internet and it's not true, you get in trouble. So I couldn't have called it anything else.
That's why nobody does that.
Yeah. That's why the internet is true.
I'm an electoral machine.
On that note, yeah, actually that website, I'm just taking a quick look at it because I looked at it on the weekend. But you do have a section there for tutorials.
Very small. I need to expand it.
Well, maybe it's small, but the tutorials themselves, there's a lot of information.
Yeah.
You're to roll with that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you've got some pictures of your work there, including that really cool miniature. It looks like an ugly guy, I know. and the... Sorry, you know, I couldn't let Spud have all the fun. We have, there's that really cool custom Scorn Fig that you did.
Mm-hmm.
That Yom painted. That looks pretty amazing.
Beautifully painted.
Yeah, he did a great job. I hate to say it.
Which one? Yeah,
the forearm guy, the sword guy, the green one.
The beautiful marble effect you did on the sword and stuff.
That we work so great together. We make a great team. I cannot sculpt for to save my life and
So you don't sculpt. Not you can't. You've decided that you can't. If you think you can't, you're right.
No. I have very limited experience with sculpting, so I just do minimal things. I can do some custom models like that, so that's why we need to team up.
Yeah, for our next collaboration, you sculpt, I'll paint.
Oh my god, that would be terrible.
That would be awesome.
Everything that can go wrong with sculpting and painting.
Yeah, but I've just told you everything you need to know, so you're good now.
I would sponsor this endeavor.
Something I wanted to mention about that huge model you were talking about, Handle. It was interesting how you did the handle for that one, because like small models. I mean, everybody can figure that out, like a cork. Just a bit of cork of or a wood bevel, but for something large like that, it's harder to figure out. So maybe you can expand on that.
Oh yeah, so I sculpted basically a model that was the size of a battle engine for War Machine. Basically, it's basically the size of a Wraith engine for anyone who's like seen the existing models. So the handle for it, I just sort of tore around my apartment for an hour to try to find something that would be big and solid enough, but that I could still bake, like that wouldn't catch fire in the oven. And eventually I came to, it's a little container for putting like the soup broth comes in. It's a Knorr thing. Basically, it's like a third of a Pringles can. It's about, I don't know, 3 inches tall. And I think I punched holes in the metal bottom and then ran the wires through the feet of the model and into the bottom and sort of twisted them up inside. And so it ends up being, yeah, like it's like you're holding up a Pringles can and with the model coming out of the top.
Exactly.
It took me a really long time to find anything that would work. I was new to the halogen oven and I was not sure like what I could bake and what I couldn't. And I called my parents. My parents are both engineers. And I'm like, if I put cardboard in the oven, is my apartment going to burn down? And they both said, probably. And I did it anyway, and my apartment didn't burn down. So I'm smarter than engineers.
Two of them.
So.
Wow, well.
Now that we've got that out of the way. It's just another one of my amazing plus points.
Well, you are amazing, Captain Fred.
It's true.
We've established it's on the web.
Or insanely lucky.
Sometimes it's all you need.
A bit of both. But,
is that expression? Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good?
Yeah. Confident enough to do stupid things and lucky enough to have them happen to work.
Okay. The handle was a bit big, but not too uncomfortable, so I could paint for a long time without my getting like my hand aching or something. Mm-hmm. And it was the way that the wire was just going around inside and like poking in and out of the container. It was really solid, so it didn't move at all. So you could trust in your handle to move the model around on the other side and paint underneath, and it wouldn't fall. So that.
Yeah, that's one of the things that comes, like, if you start sculpting and making like your own wire armatures. You start to learn to have to actually how to like mount them into things, because usually you can't use a lot of glue when you're like mounting the wire to something. So you run the wire in and out one of the sides, and you twist it around, and you mount it back in somewhere else. Like you just twist the wire up so that it can't possibly just pull straight out until you unwind it. So yeah, they end up looking really messy, just wires all over the place, but they're solid.
Okay, well, I think we're sliding into the realm of rambling at this point.
But that's my specialty. Attention deficit disorder.
Fair enough.
Plus, I want to actually find out how much battery your recorder has. We're just going to keep going until the voices go dead.
Let's not. So, I think we've covered everything we wanted to cover.
And more.
Excellent. So, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll come back, we'll wrap up the show. So, be right back, geeks. And we're back. All right, guys. I don't think we have any shoutouts this week.
No one did anything interesting anywhere in the world.
Yeah. We just didn't have any new friends.
No new friends. Just some old friends. And Spud.
Correctly listed.
There we go. Okay. Well, Spud, I want to thank you for coming on board here and talking to us about sculpting. I know it's an interesting topic for a lot of hobbyists. And it's a pretty daunting topic to a lot of us too, so it's good to have the, you know, kind of the knowledge base, right, of someone who actually knows what they're doing, access to the database as it is.
And and we will be providing the full database of all of my random links and crap, so everyone will be as awesome as me by your next episode. It's how long it takes.
Apparently, you underrate yourself pretty hardcore there.
No, I just believe in the power of positivity.
Your overwhelming positivity?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think that you believe in others?
No.
Okay.
But I find that lying is a good motivational tactic.
Jeez. And if we are to believe you, they only have to read that and go cut their hair.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I led off with that before I lost all of my credibility. So hopefully they'll just read through they'll listen through the episode in chronological order and just take that first piece of advice.
Well, I've already got the balding thing well underway.
And when was the last time you tried to sculpt? Huh?
Well, that's true. That's true. It was probably before I started losing my hair, so... Mm-hmm.
Try again.
So someone told me that there's a reboot of Heroes, and the bad guy is apparently a guy who, if he gets his arm cut off, he grows an arm, and the arm grows a him. And I was like, that sounds like a really useless superpower for 99.9% of the human population, because we could all have that power. Most of us would never know. So maybe you have the awesome superpower of no hair, but you've just never gotten your arm cut off, so you don't know that you can sculpt. I'm not mixing my metaphors at all here.
Wow.
I mean this to be taken literally.
No, if you cut the sentence and change the order, it makes sense.
Yeah.
We must be getting tired. Okay. So on that note, you know what? Let's wrap up the show. It's been running for way longer than we originally intended. But that's okay. It's plenty packed full of awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So on that note, signing off. Take care.
Bye, geeks.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Geeks of the North. If you want to contact us, you can email us at geeksofthenorth@gmail.com. Read our blog at geeksofthenorth.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geeksofthenorth. Or follow us on Twitter at Geeks of the North. You can follow me, Paul, on Twitter at PRFilio and Antoine at Eltonio Berg. See you in 2 weeks, geeks.
Thank you for checking out a United Geeks Network family member. If you enjoyed it and are looking for other online media with a geek culture slant, head over to UnitedGeeksNetwork.com where you will find The Game Huntress. Wherever there's XP or achievements, The Game Huntress blog will always be on the hunt. The United Geeks Network. You can broadcast your geekiness at UnitedGeeksNetwork.com.